He's got a beautiful backswing.
Dad, oh, he got all of that one.
Oh my gosh.
That is amazing.
Layup with an iron into the hazard.
Well, that wasn't quite what I meant, you know.
Welcome in, everybody, to another edition of the 73rd Hole. Colby Powell, Taylor Williams with you here on a Monday. A Jim Herman, Tyler Strafacci, Jerry Kelly, Stacey Lewis, Charlie Woods Monday. All winners this weekend. Good stuff in the world of golf. Taylor, we were just kind of joking before we turned the mics on here. Jim Herman basically does one of two things. He either takes his weekends off to spend time with family, because that's important, obviously, to Jim Herman, or he goes ahead and wins the golf tournament. Jim Herman is not a guy to waste his weekend on the golf course if he's not going to win.
This Jim Herman, our man Jim Herman, and we had brought him up a couple of times under those names of the guys who we mentioned who will win a tour event, and then they'll go on, they'll use their two-year exemption status and essentially not do anything the rest of the time. And our man Jim Herman shoots a total of 16 under on the weekend. 16 under. Went
124.
Went 61-63. And it goes to show if our man Jim Herman can ever get to a weekend, he does something pretty special. So now that he finally got there, he was able to break through and get to 21 under, end up beating Billy Horschel by one shot, who was nothing to bring home to mama. And I saw a 10 under on the weekend. He went 66, 64, 65, 65. So essentially averaged 5 under each day. That's not good enough for the trophy, but good enough for the second place check, which I believe I saw was just a little under $700K, so not a bad weekend for old Billy Horschel.
Trivia. How many top 25s does Jim Herman have over the past two PGA Tour seasons?
I would top 25s?
Top 25s.
I would say over the past 2 years, I'm going with three.
He has two.
Both his wins.
Do you know how many wins Jim Herman has over the past two seasons?
Two.
Two. Two wins, two top 25s. I mean, the dude, he never plays good golf, except for about once a year, and he wins. Also, he had zero PGA Tour wins when he turned 38. He's now a 42-year-old with three PGA Tour wins. You got to commend the guy. He's boring. It's not like you're getting excited when you turn your TV on and it's the one time a year Jim Herman's name is on the leaderboard, but the dude's a grinder. I mean, tried to figure it out for a couple decades and finally kind of did around age 40, and now he's a three-time PGA Tour winner. Fun fact for the day. Jim Herman has as many PGA Tour wins as Patrick Cantlay and Tony Finau combined.
Wow.
He also has as many PGA Tour wins over the past 13 months as Rory McIlroy.
Wow. You could probably keep throwing him out there. Probably, he has the same amount as Ricky Fowler, too, if not more, over the last 13 months, too. I mean, Spieth, I mean, he's won more than all these guys. I mean, recently, yeah. I mean, we could probably just keep throwing him out there. So it's crazy to think about because that's the craziest stat you mentioned right there, Colby, is that he has as many top 25s as he does wins. And, you know, we talk about stats all the time with Morikawa has three times as many wins as he does missed cuts. But for someone to only win the times they finish in the top 25, he literally doesn't. You know, if he does make the cut, he's not anywhere close to the leaderboard. He's not sniffing, checking. It's not like, at least from what I've noticed, he's not up there on a Sunday and then blowing up on the weekend. He's just not there.
He's just not there.
Yeah, he's just not there, not competing. And
Friday afternoon, he was one shot outside the cut line with four holes left on his round on Friday.
How many times have we talked about on this show how important just getting in on that cut line?
Gotta make the cut.
Yeah, one stroke to get in from Friday to Saturday. All of a sudden, he shoots 16 under on the weekend and wins a tournament and gets him another two-year exemption.
Yeah, and good for him. Good for him.
Of course, fabulous.
I've got no problem with it. It's nice to see the guys who grind and have some top 10s here and there, and they're just so close, and then they break through for a win. That's nice. It's almost to me, I don't even know if it nice is the word. It's weird to have a guy like Jim Herman who only wins or misses the cut. It's weird, but it's not a bad thing. I think it shows what a pure game golf is, that a guy who's been trying to figure it out for two decades, now we're living in an era of Bryson DeChambeau, 200-mile-an-hour ball speeds, and Koepka, and DJ, and Rory, and you know Tony Finau, and these just absolute bombers. And Jim Herman is just poking it out there down the middle. And see how many feet of putts he made this week?
I saw at one point it was around it was over 400 mark.
Yeah, 444 is how many feet of putts he made this week. And we said last Wednesday on our preview show that sometimes these shootouts can be tough to handicap and figure out who's going to win, because really, whenever you have to make 25 birdies to win a golf tournament, you have to make a lot of putts in the 15-foot range. Jim Herman did it this week.
He did, and we mentioned last week a lot about this is kind of funny. A guy we mentioned last week, Paul Casey. You remember we had DJ make that putt on 18 to get him a T2 with Paul Casey. Jim Herman's win this last week moved him from 192nd up to 54th, which is one spot ahead of said Paul Casey, who we talked about last week.
Yeah, another fun Jim Herman stat. So he won last year, right? His only top 25 on the tour.
That was in Houston, wasn't it?
Yes, it was in Houston. I don't know. I didn't even know that this was possible until Jim Herman did it. He won a tour event and did not make the FedEx Cup playoffs.
Last year?
Yes. He won a tour event and was not in the top 125 at the end of the season. Last year actually might not have been Houston. Last year might have been an opposite field event. Houston might have been a few years ago, two or three years ago.
Because I can't remember if he won Houston before or after it switched, because it used to be the week before the Masters.
I think he won it before it switched. He did. I know for a fact he won it before it switched, because I remember it was a huge storyline for him as a guy who'd grinded his whole career to win at Houston and be able to play in the Masters the very next week. I think last year was an opposite field event, and then his first tour win was in Houston.
Oh, yeah, because I'm looking at it right here. Yeah, it says last year he finished 138th and had one tour win, so it happened somewhere. So I'll go to the official World Golf Rankings while you go on to the next subject, Kobe, and I'll see exactly where that was. Because for some reason, I think Houston was his first win that he had.
Yeah, I think it was, because it was a big deal. It was very emotional for him. Yeah, Shell Houston Open in 2016.
This win also moved him up from 318th in the world to 91st in the world. Up into the top 100, and so that goes to show. So I'll just read off some of the other finishes going back before he had this win. Made the cut at the PGA, finished T77, missed cut, T33, RBC Heritage. Before that, missed cut, T55 at the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am, missed cut, T27 at the Tournament of Champions in Kapalua, which has a 35 cap field. So, I mean, a field with 35 people in it. And then after that, a T35 and event in the fall, and then 80th, 77th, missed cut. And then you're exactly right, Kobe. It was the Barbasol last year. He finished first at. It was the, I believe that's the one that's held the week of the British Open,
yes,
if I'm not
it
mistaken.
Is. In yes. like Kentucky or something like so, that.
Something weird, yes.
Yeah. And all three of his career victories now, one stroke victories for Jim Herman. So big congrats to Jim Herman. Like you said, also on the leaderboard, Billy Horschel, Kevin Kisner, Webb Simpson, Doc Redman, Siwoo Kim, those four guys tied for third. So Webb keeps up his good run at the Wyndham.
It does. Before I get into Webb here, I want to mention something about Jim Herman. We mentioned this win moved him up all the way into the top 100 in the world. Before he had won last year at the Barbasol, he dropped all the way down to 1,252 in the world.
Wow.
And then that win propelled him into the top 300, and then he's had these stagnant finishes. Then this win gets him in the top 100. So whether what level of golf you're at, whether it be at the highest level or just at your local club level, never give up. Keep playing, because your game will turn around eventually, as we just see with Jim Herman.
Yep, absolutely. And then we pull up the top 125 for the FedEx Cup. Look at the guys who were right on the bubble. First man out, Fabian Gomez. Last man in, Wyndham Clark. At 125, Shane Lowry with a good enough finish this week to get himself in. He was one of the big names that we were talking about. Zach Johnson gets himself in. He was outside. He actually moved all the way up to 104 with a pretty good finish. So some guys moved out from out to in. We still have some names that missed. Russell Knox, Charles Schwartzel, Rafa Cabrera Bayo, Nick Watney used to be a name. Matt Wallace, Sergio Garcia both missed. Boy, your boy Sergio, I tell you what, made the cut, and then game went to hell on the weekend.
He had to have been thinking about trying to make it to the top 125, it seemed like, because he was down there with our boy Spieth, who we literally couldn't have called any better to start the week. Going to make the cut and not be anywhere in contention. And I thought Sergio would have a little bit better weekend. He got off to a pretty good start on Thursday, was pretty snagged in after that. But, yeah, we can get into some of the other guys, like you just talked about and missed. Our boy Charles Schwartzel, love his hat, love his putter.
Hate his putter.
Love was in quotations there. And close personal friend Matt Wallace missed the cut. Did you see Chesson Hadley? I saw what he did yesterday. It was a little frustrating. He's I guess he hopped onto a par three, and he told the people who were sitting there before they was going to make a hole in one. The ball is in the air, and he's like, I told you I was going to do it. And it landed like 25 feet past the hole, and then next thing I know, he has to make a four-footer for par to save it. So he's out here bragging that he's going to make a hole in one. He's having to grind for a par. He may even miss the putt. I actually think I walked out right before he hit it. But yeah, you're looking down some of the other guys. Danny Willett wasn't in there. Local guy Robert Streb was 145. Looking down even some other guys.
It's a tough week for the local guys. Reen Gibson, Michael Gellerman, Robert Streb all missed the cut. Yeah. And Taylor Gooch was tied for the lead after 36, and he ended up finishing...
I think T25, I believe.
Yeah, that sounds right. Let's go down. T25, it was just he and Ryan Armour at T25. Nice little 54K check for Taylor, though. So not a bad week at the Wyndham, but I know this season... He has really put himself in contention after Thursday, Friday a few times and hadn't had the best rounds on the weekends. But I still think that those are really good learning opportunities for Taylor, a guy who's still fairly young in his PGA Tour career and hasn't been in contention a ton. You know, it's a different feeling in your hands and your mind. Everything just starts moving a little faster on the weekend. So every time he can get himself into contention deeper into a golf tournament, I think that gets him closer and closer to putting four good rounds together and giving himself a chance to win on the tour.
Well, those are the steps you have to take. We hear Tiger talk about it all the time. Hear other players talk about it, whatever it may be. And you have to go through the process. Taylor even mentioned it when he was on the podcast with us about all the steps he had to take through the McKenzie Tour, what at the time was the Webb.com Tour, now the Korn Ferry Tour. There's just different steps you have to take throughout this process. And from the outside looking in, I think these next couple weeks will be really big for Taylor, because right now, looking at it, he's currently 62nd in the FedEx Cup standings. And correct me if I'm wrong, Colby, it's top 70. Because it used to be, they used to have four events, now there's only three. And yeah, it used to go from top 125 to top 100, then 70, then 30. Now they've just eliminated the middle one, or the second one, the 100 mark. So it goes straight from 125 to 70. So with Taylor sitting right now at 62, and with how inflated the points are at each of these events, this next week will be big for him, because even if he has a medium so weak, if there's guys below him that play well, he'll get bumped down outside the top 70 and not make it onto Olympia Fields. Or actually, Mike McGraw said he had that famous story about when he was a freshman out, so that would be kind of cool for him to go back there and play a playoff event at. So I think these next couple weeks will be really important for Taylor, like you mentioned, in that growing process, because sitting in 62, he has a couple good weeks. He's going to get himself a trip to Eastlake if he plays right.
Yeah, and a trip to Eastlake would be awesome, if for no other reason, because you guarantee yourself some pretty decent money if you just because if you make it to Eastlake, you're guaranteed a top 30.
Yeah.
You're guaranteed a top 30.
I think the least you get is like 400,000 with the FedEx Cup points at the end, you know, the accumulative. It's not just for the tournament, but I think the lowest last year was like 350,000. I may be wrong on that, but it was somewhere along those lines.
Yeah, exactly. So also another thing we called very good last week, I said I would be more surprised if Brooks Koepka won the golf tournament than I would be if he missed the cut.
And where was he at?
And he ran out and missed the cut, and it wasn't close. He shot 72-70. The cut line was 3 under, so he was 5 off the cut line. It's just, he doesn't care about this tournament. Also, he is not right physically, and he's being really secretive about what it is that's wrong. He told somebody this week that it's not the knee, it's some sort of lower leg.
He was working on the hip at the U.S. Open on the left hip, and so maybe the fact that his knee was hurt maybe put more strain on the left hip.
Because, but why is it such a secret?
Because that's just who he is. I mean, it's very similar to, it's not similar, it just shows the guy that he is. Whenever he switched back to his M5 driver, but because he's not sponsored with anyone, he didn't say that it was a TaylorMade driver. He just said, I'm switching back to my old driver that I had. And someone asked him, like, oh, what brand was it? Because I guess they weren't aware. And he was like, well, they're not paying me to use it, so I'm not going to say the brand. And it's like, it's like, anyone who knows golf knows you use a TaylorMade M5. I mean, come on, dude, just say it. It doesn't matter. It's just, goes back to all those reasons that we try to pick him apart for his off the course stuff that he does. And to be honest with you, it didn't break my heart one bit that he didn't play there this weekend, and it wasn't shocking, especially you brought it up in particular. But any time it's not a major or a World Golf Championship event in Memphis, I'm not really looking at Koepka as a guy that's on my radar until I see something a lot different than what I've seen the last few weeks.
Yeah, I mean, I think you and I are both saving him in the one and done for Wingfoot, because he just has a knack for showing up in majors, and particularly at U.S. Opens, where he had two consecutive victories and then a second place finish last summer to Gary Woodland out at Pebble Beach. So I think we're both saving him for that. But I just I don't know. Something is off right now with Koepka. He's, you know, he turned himself into kind of the bad boy of golf, the truth speaker, talking trash on some of the guys that he plays with and not giving a you know what and just going out and playing majors. And I don't know. I think that the more and more his shtick has started to wear on people, I don't think he's as well liked as he was a couple of years ago. I think that maybe bothers him a little bit. I don't know. I just feel like he doesn't love the game, so I don't know. It's just everything with Koepka is weird to me. We'll see if he can bounce back later in the season and get some things straightened out.
Let me ask you about another guy, Colby, who was another big name who missed the cut, who's listen to these finishes since the start. The guy I'm talking about, want to ask you about, Colby, is Justin Rose. So I'll go back from this last event going back. So he missed the cut this last week at the Wyndham, finished ninth at the PGA, missed three straight cuts in a row, and then in the two events back, he finished T14 at Heritage, and then finished T3 at Colonial Charles Schwab. So the man in the seven events back has missed four cuts, but his other three events are top 14s. What do you make of Rose? I mean, this is a guy who we talked a lot about before the break, who was switching off of the Honma equipment, getting back to some sticks that he liked, but he's so hit or miss. He is the definition of a wild card right now.
Yeah, Justin Rose, you know, the old movie, This is 40. This is 40 for Justin Rose. I think it's just going to be a little inconsistent. The putter is not there every week for Justin Rose. You know, you remember whenever he was, did he ever get to be number one in the world?
I don't think so.
He got close, and obviously he's a U.S. Open champion in 2013.
The closest I see, the year-end ranked, he was number two at the end of 2018. Let me go in and see. Oh, yes, he actually did get to number one.
He did, okay.
He got to number one twice. He was world number one after the BMW Championship in 2018, and he dropped a second after that at the Tour Championship, and then he was number one the week after he won the Turkish Airlines Open in 2018. So, yeah, another guy who we don't mention about when we talk about guys who had ranked up to number one in the world and have kind of, because he's down to number 17 in the world now. Yeah. So
also the only Olympic champion who was in the field this past week.
Only Olympic champion ever.
The only Olympic champion who will be in the field this next week.
Yeah, since in the last 200 years or whatever.
The only active Olympic champion.
The only alive, yes. The only one who is not 6 feet under, yes. So, yeah, that's why you like...
do you remember how solid he was with the putter?
Oh, it was unbelievable.
And now it's... it's very hit or miss, even on the short ones. You don't trust Justin Rose standing over putts. The ball striking isn't what it used to be. I don't know if, because he's not with Foley anymore, is he? I don't think he's with Foley anymore.
I think that, there was some sort of split down there, but then I think he might have went back. I don't know. We'll look it up, because I want to go to his, whatchamacallit.
But you're right. He's been very inconsistent, which is why I had a buddy asking me, we played last Tuesday or Wednesday, and he was asking me who to run out in the one in Dunpool. He said he had Rose picked right now, and I was like, I kind of don't like Rose.
Yeah, yes, Justin Rose, Sean Foley split after long, successful run. That was in June 17, 2020, so this was very recent that they split, very recent.
Yeah, so maybe he's just trying to kind of figure some things out on his own right now, and that's
leading. They were together 11 years.
Wow, yeah. I mean, so they were together for the best golf of Justin Rose's career. Yeah, I mean,
absolutely. Yeah,
won the major in 2013, got to number one in the world in 2018, Olympic champion in 2016. So that's by far the best golf of his career. And maybe it can just be attributed to him trying to figure things out by himself right now, trying to figure out equipment, trying to figure out his own game, trying to figure out that goofy looking putter he's got. I don't know why he didn't just switch to a spider.
It seems like everyone out there, it's so funny. Everyone talks about technology with drivers and the golf ball and everything. How much different are putters than they were 10 to 20 years ago? Yeah. I mean, people don't take that in consideration at all whenever they think about, oh, these guys are shooting so many under. Well, the greens are better than they ever been, and these guys can use the putters and technology make it to where the putter face literally doesn't move when you take it back and forth. So if you want to dial back the distance, why don't you just make the greens roll like a six and then make everyone use a bullseye putter, and then you'll see the scores go way higher.
Yeah, you'll see the scores go way higher. I would absolutely hate that. That is not a good way to impact the game of golf. We need to take a quick break. I want to remind everybody, get down to Bushwood in Chickasha. Bushwood Golf and Country Club. Memberships for the whole family. It's not just fun for you, the whole family. They got the pool open. The bar's open inside. They got a steakhouse right there in the restaurant, in the clubhouse now. So beautiful place, beautiful facility. Head on down to Bushwood Golf and Country Club in Chickasha. 405-224-1250. That's 405-224-1250. Get on down to Bushwood. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back on the other side. A lot more golf to recap from this weekend. The USAM was phenomenal. I want to get Taylor's thoughts on Bandon Dunes, how it looked on TV, if that would be fun for your average everyday amateur golfer. The son of a famous golfer had a big weekend, and that's getting some run on social media, so we'll talk about that and much, much more. Maybe we'll even sprinkle Jerry Kelly's ace in here. We've got a lot still to get to. Stay with us here on the 73rd hole.
When something the size of a golf ball hits your roof, you need to call McRae Roofing. McRae Roofing is Oklahoma's designer roofing service specialist. For years, Jeff McRae and the experienced team at McRae Roofing and Exteriors have served fellow Oklahomans by helping them with their roofing needs. McRae Roofing uses only top quality materials and professional crews to make sure that each job is done right, so it will give you the years of service, security, and protection you need from the unpredictable Oklahoma weather. McRae Roofing offers residential and commercial roofing, ventilation services, and custom copper designs. McRae Roofing is dedicated to exceeding the homeowner's expectations. It's not just a roof, it is your home's crowning glory. Call McRae Roofing today at 405-692-4000. That's 405-692-4000. Make sure to also visit their website at mcraeroofing.com. That's M-C-R-A-Y roofing.com. Don't get caught with a leaking roof. Contact McRae Roofing for your free inspection today.
Welcome back. Rolling along here on the 73rd hole. Colby Powell and Taylor Williams with you. Really excited to get going in the FedEx Cup playoffs. Getting underway this week at the Northern Trust in Boston. And I don't know if you know this, Taylor, but Boston is close to New York. So one Mr. Tiger Woods and one Mr. Justin Thomas headed over to Wingfoot this morning for a practice round.
They were spotted, nice.
Yeah. They were spotted on the range this morning. Got there's a little 18-second video going around Twitter this morning of them hitting range balls at Wingfoot. It was interesting. Justin Thomas was wearing shorts and a jacket, and Tiger was wearing pants and no jacket. So they were kind of opposites in that way. But I mean, I think all signs point toward Tiger winning the U.S. Open is what I'm hearing.
God, I wish I could say that. But after the putting performance I saw the last, or especially the middle 2 days of the PGA Championship, I can't count on anything at this point. I'm going to start to see something better. But at the end of the day, I know that Tiger wants to make it to East Lake, and then Wingfoot will be a couple weeks after the Tour Championship. So for us golf fans, like we'd mentioned many other times, these next 5 weeks are just going to be spectacular, and I hope that Tiger is able to, if he is able to make it to East Lake, he's able to play these three rounds or three tournaments healthy, be able to take that week off, and then be ready to go for Wingfoot, where that's what we really care about.
Yeah, that's what we really care about are the majors, and obviously a U.S. Open at this point in his career maybe doesn't set up very well for him, but we're still all going to be optimistic going in because it's what we do. It's Tiger Woods. So speaking of Tiger Woods, by the way, we won't dwell on Charlie for too long, but Charlie might be a GOAT in the making because he had a U.S. Kids tournament Tiger caddied for him in last weekend, and the scoreboard, it's public record. It's on the U.S. Kids website. Charlie Woods went out and fired a little 3-under-33 in the nine-hole event to win by five. I would imagine Charlie has pretty good access to swing coach and facilities to fine-tune his game, so it's probably not a fair fight for 11-year-old Charlie Woods playing against other 11-year-olds.
Well, you remember back in the 2000 when there was the Tiger effect, when everyone started faltering down the stretch when they saw him on the leaderboard?
Yes.
I'm assuming it's the exact same for these kids, seeing Charlie Woods, and then especially if Tiger's out there caddying too, seeing him out there. I don't know. If I was, what is Charlie, 11, 12?
Charlie's 11.
If I was, that was exactly how old when I played in my first tournament, 11 years old. If I played in my first tournament 11 years old and Tiger Woods was there, I would have to change my underwear five times because I'd shit my pants all day.
See, but here's my question. Some of these kids, you know, born in 2009, missed the bulk of Tiger Woods' career. Now, obviously, probably watched the Masters last year, and they know who Tiger Woods is. They know that he won the Masters. They know that he's, you know, the GOAT. But they didn't grow up on Tiger Woods like you and I did whenever he was in his prime. So maybe for them at that age, it's not quite as intimidating as it would be for us because, you know, we remember watching him run the putt in against Bob May. We remember watching him hang the ball on the lip in 05 at Augusta. Those are things that these kids have no idea about. The legend and the lore that comes along with Tiger Woods might not get to these kids as bad.
It might not, but at the same time, it would be the equivalent of, like, like we've seen The Last Dance or whatever, but we didn't watch Michael Jordan play live, but yet right. we still know his greatness and yeah, what he true. Did. And if we saw him and his kid, we'd be like, oh shit, well, they know what they're doing. Right. So, you know, these kids are like, oh my Lord, that's Tiger Woods. I didn't see him win by 15 shots at Pebble, but I know that he did it. And I know that he has 15 majors. And I know that he's the best golfer of all time. So his son must be pretty dang good, especially when he's out there with all of his custom fit, tailor made clubs, probably looking sharp as a tack with his Nike gear. And like you said, got the access to all the practice facilities, all the coaching. Let's put it this way. If Charlie needs something when it comes regarding golf wise, I don't think he's going to be lacking in that aspect.
No, I think he's got it. I think that they've pretty much got a tailor made truck in the basement where they can fine tune everything that they want to. I almost think that in some of these tournaments Charlie plays, it's probably more star, the parents of the other kids, the dads of the other kids are probably more starstruck than the kids are.
I know that I would be.
Oh,
I mean, we don't have kids yet, but we have friends at our age who have kids. They're not quite 11 years old yet, but they're still younger. And I tell you what, if I was out just watching them as, you know, like the cool uncle or whatever, and I saw Tiger Woods out there, I'd draw, drop, and
you tell yourself, don't be weird. Don't be weird. Yeah. Don't be weird.
You don't want to be that guy who's like, you know, oh my God, the most starstruck you could possibly be is what would happen. And I think that's, you know, whenever you're dealing with tournaments like this, the U.S. kids stuff, I think a lot, Charlie has that, is going to have an advantage in that aspect. And good for him, too. Good for him. Yeah, that's not something he did to himself by any stretch.
Yeah, and clearly he loves the game. Tiger said that he loves the game. And obviously he's a great player. It's, you don't want to put these expectations on him to be Tiger Woods, obviously. That's
fair.
Yeah, and we're not sitting here predicting Charlie to win 10 majors or anything. The kid's 11 years old. Just have fun. Play golf, have fun. And my thing is, if he wants to play golf, let him play golf, and he doesn't have to be compared to his dad. He always will be, but, you know, just let him play golf and have fun. And if he plays golf until he's through high school and he decides, you know what, I enjoy this, but it's not what I want to do with my life, then that's fine too.
He's not going to have a problem. And yeah. I think we saw it too a little bit when Tiger won the Masters. You could tell how his daughter Sam was a little bit shy and didn't want to be out there. And we see she's not a golfer. Right. So he's not like forcing it onto his kids saying, you have to play golf, blah, 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 all this stuff. So it doesn't appear he's forcing it onto Charlie. Charlie's seeming to enjoy it so far. And if he wants to keep going with it, I think he's going to have an excellent future answering chance just because, you know, we mention it all the time. There's so many great players out there, but a lot of times come down to opportunity and when you play your best. Yeah. And Charlie's going to get more opportunities than anyone else out there. So
golf's a game of means.
Absolutely.
You have to have the means to play. And I mean, I think you could say almost with certain confidence that no kid ever will have access to things that Charlie will have access to growing up. Just being the kid of Tiger Woods, the house that he lives in, the mechanical putting green they've got in the basement, the complete practice facility, driving range, chipping area, putting greens they have out in the backyard. It's just people don't have that.
No.
And he does. And you know, another reason that he probably enjoys golf, we all enjoy things that we're good at. Is there anything you're good at that you don't enjoy? Because I enjoy almost everything that I'm good at.
It's hard to find something you're good at and then you don't like. And the only time
he's good at it.
The only time you don't like it is, you know, like we are on golf. If you have a bad day on the course, then you don't like it as much. You know, you have like what happened in your club championship where you have two vicious lip outs that because the flags are still in that shouldn't have happened. So then all of a sudden that makes you know, kind of cringe a little bit.
Yeah, I had the flag stick keep me out twice yesterday. Both of them were on 20 footers for birdie on the second and third handicap hole on the course.
Brutal.
Some good shots just to get it in there to 20 feet and really good putts that the flag stick kept out.
Just brutal. And a thing for Charlie, too, also is that with him still being 11, has so much time to grow and to see the world and to experience the world for what it is. And if for any reason he could get burned out from either hearing all the stuff about his dad or once he starts becoming a junior player, if he keeps this up, he'll be a very polarizing figure. So maybe he turns out to be sort of like a sister and not like the stardom. There's a lot of factors that go into this, but as of right now, Charlie's looking like a stick.
Yeah, absolutely, no doubt about it. So also this weekend, the USAM at Bandon Dunes. So I mean, this was kind of a USAM for the ages. First off, you're playing at Bandon Dunes, which is a totally different breed of golf course.
And also, too, let's bring it all back to the exact same thing we talked about last week, the West Coast golf coverage time. How great was it to turn on the USAM last night at what time did it finish? 9 o'clock, 9:30 our time?
Yeah, or what, we got together Saturday night. I don't even remember what time it was over. We had some friends over Saturday night, and y'all were over here and we're watching the USAM, having a couple drinks and just hanging out. It's dark outside. We're watching the USAM. We're watching Amon Gupta and Tyler Schifacci come down the last hole. And you know, the Gupta deal was, it was so exciting for everybody here locally. Amon Gupta, you know, recently was ranked the 500th amateur in the world. Wasn't sure if he was going to get in, got in, and then made the absolute most of his opportunity and got to the semis. Four down through 11, mounts a valiant comeback, gets it all square going into 18, winds up in the fairway bunker off the tee. And it's, you know, if you haven't seen it, he ended up having to hit three times from the same fairway bunker, bladed the first one into the lip, bladed the second one into the lip, and then got the third one out. I shouldn't say bladed. I don't know if they were stone cold bladed, but he used the same club the third time and got it out over the lip where he wanted it to go. And he had Coach Bratton on the bag, and I can't imagine Coach Bratton would be letting him hit a club that he didn't think he could carry that lip with all square on the 18th on par 5.
I was reading up on it, and I saw somewhere, could be wrong, I saw we were trying to use a 9-iron. And I may be wrong on that. It may have just been what I saw. It may be something different. But if you're trying to use a 9-iron, the lip was steep, but it wasn't steep enough to where you needed it wasn't like a St. Andrews bunker where you're up against it and you have to just take a 60-degree and plop it out.
It was not that. Also, he was 10, 15 feet back from the lip.
Yeah, he wasn't up again. It was still a high lip. It's not.
Yeah, 4 or 5 feet.
You
probably
couldn't take a 5-iron out of this by any stretch of the imagination. No, and I think a lot of people were criticizing him for that, thing that he was trying to get up to the green. And you know, obviously, in hindsight, using a 9-iron, thinking you can get it high, take out your pitching wedge. If he has a gap wedge, use that. Get that extra little bit of height. But in all honesty, he could use any club in his bag on that first one, and it wasn't going to get there because it hit the sand before it hit the lip. So his first shot was just horrible contact. Then it seemed like the second shot, it rolled down a little further to the left, kind of where he was standing almost. So he was a little bit lower than he was. And then he hit the lip that was in front of him, which was a different lip than he was even trying to hit over the first time.
Yeah, because it was actually the way the bunker shaped. It was kind of heart-shaped to where the lip that he hit the second time was actually closer to him.
Yeah.
Because his ball had rolled down the face of the bunker and it had rolled to the left. So then I thought on his second shot that he actually had less room.
Had
to get it up quicker.
You had to get it up quick, or you had to take a completely different line. You had to either go way right or way left, which I don't think you want to do at that course because of all the tall stuff. And that was definitely an intense match. And I keep pronouncing the guy's name that wrong was pronounce it for me, Colby. I was Schifacci.
Tyler Schifacci.
Schifacci. I keep butchering the name, and I don't want to do it.
First time in U.S. amateur history that the same university has produced the USAM winner two years in a row.
Georgia Tech.
Yeah, can you name the other two? Three, obviously, the guy last year. But there's two much bigger names who went to Georgia Tech who've won the USAM.
That's easy. That's Bobby Jones and Matt Kuchar.
It is Bobby Jones and Matt Kuchar. Yeah, and then the guy last year was...
I can't even remember the guy's name. That's what I'm saying. The guy
Ogletree? I think it was Andy Ogletree is what I think. Because they interviewed him yesterday is the only reason I remember that. They had him on the broadcast at one point because he, I think, roomed with Tyler Schifacci at one point at Georgia Tech. So they were talking to Ogletree about what it was like to see Schifacci having all this success and having this great week and, you know, went to the 18th hole four times. And the four times that he went to the 18th.
Andy Ogletree. Yep, you're right.
Andy Ogletree. Yeah.
And Hovland won it the year before. And then year before that, guy who's out there playing really well in the tour, Doc Redman, won in 2017 at Riviera.
Yeah, that's awesome. Doc Redman had a top three finish this week, tied for third at the Wyndham Championship. So Tyler Schifacci four times goes to the 18th hole. The first time that he went to the 18th hole was against Olive Pinto. Well, I can't remember his name exactly.
This was the caddy situation.
This was the caddy situation where the caddy went into the bunker, used his hand to feel the depth of the sand, which was deemed loss of hole is the rule.
What in the hell was the caddy thinking?
Man,
is there waste areas out there where you're allowed to touch it? That has to be the only that's the only thing that I can think of.
Yes, there are. There are waste areas along the fairways that do not classify as bunkers that you are allowed to feel. It weirdly, I have a mutual friend with that caddy. I have a friend who lives in Bandon, Oregon and is a caddy at Bandon Dunes.
For 7.3 billion people in the world, it sure is a small world.
So randomly I have a mutual friend, and so I talked to him the other day, and you know, he said that he's that the caddy was really struggling with it because obviously he didn't know the rule. So to him, he didn't know he was doing anything wrong. And then the weight of knowing that he just took his player's chance to win the biggest event of his life away from him, I mean, that's going to weigh on him, obviously. But it's one of those things where I don't know what he was doing. Yeah, I have no idea what could have been going through his mind when he went in there to do that.
So two things about the caddy thing. One, this isn't what we saw with the two guys who were in the finals. Their dad was caddying for him. This was not one of those situations where it was a close friend or a family member. This was a Bandon Dunes caddy who was hired on. So this was
and a lot of Bandon Dunes caddies caddied this week.
And so the player and the caddy did not know each other before this. This was not a prior relationship. This was just hire a guy, pay him for his duties. Off we go trying to win the tournament. But, and then also too, if you're a caddy at that course, and it doesn't even matter how long you play, when can you graze your hand on the sand and feel it? I know they changed the rule a couple years ago where you can move loose impediments, but that still doesn't mean you could take your hand and rub it in the sand.
Yeah, I really don't know. There's just no way to know what he possibly could have been thinking in that moment. And by the way, we need to give all the credit in the world to Pinto, the player, because the player, right after it happened, gave an interview, was phenomenal, said things like this. And this is in the moment when emotions are running high. And for him to act that calm, cool, and collected, you know, it wasn't like the next day after he was able to sleep on it and get his mind right to do some good PR and stuff and look good. This was moments after it happened, emotions running high, and he still said all the right things.
I saw the video of where it was him, Strafacci, did I say it right?
Strafacci, yep.
Him, Strafacci, and the rules official, and a rules official said, told Strafacci, he won, lost, and then the other guy, who all these weird names, I just can't pronounce them right. And he just, as soon as he hears it, just takes off his hat and tries to shake his hand. Obviously, with Corona, they just did a fist bump. But you could tell he was as, you know, obviously a lot of people would just be pissed off, breaking clubs and that kind of thing. And the reason I bring that up, too, about the relationship is, I feel like you could have two sides of the coin on it where if you know someone forever, like if it was you and me who did it, then it could be easier to forgive. But for example, those guys playing yesterday had it like their dad did it. Then it's like, you know, there's that intense, obviously, relationship you have and then get mad. But this is just someone that you don't know from Adam and Eve. And it's, you know, it's some guy you just hired to carry the bag for you. Then all of a sudden he costs you the championship. Because that's the thing a lot of people don't realize about match play is that a lot of times these penalties that when you play stroke play or just a stroke or two, they're loss of hole in match play. You don't even get to play.
And if it happens on the third hole, then you probably don't look back at it because you're like, you know what? Yeah, it happened on the third hole. I had 15 more to make it up. If I didn't win, that's on me. No. They were all square on 18 green. Green side at 18 when this happened. Also, the next day, Pinto sent out a picture of the two of them embracing and a picture and said, look, this is a good guy. He's a great friend now. Mistakes happen. Let's all move on. Pinto, if this caddy would have had a player who would have been upset about it and who would have handled it poorly, I think it would weigh on him even tougher. I think that it's going to be easier for the caddy to get over with and move on with his life because the player handled it so well.
I agree, and it's no matter what, it's a tough deal for the player, and you could use it as motivation, you can use it as sadness, and but also too for him, it's nice to the fact that it happened to the guy who ended up winning the tournament.
Yes.
So that obviously helps. Had Strafacci went out the next round and got his ass kicked. I believe he played Hagestad the
next
year.
So anyway, I was running down Strafacci's 18th holes that he played. Round of 16 was against Pinto. He won because the caddy raked his hand in the sand. Round of 8, he played against Stuart Hagestad, who...
Mid-Am champions, played in the Masters two or three times now. Yep. Quite a bit.
Made the cut.
Yes.
Yep, made the cut. 29 years old, Hagestad is, but still gets in all this AM stuff, and it's awesome. He's a great amateur player. Hagestad blows into the penalty area way right with a second shot on 18. So Strafacci, in a way, kind of has another 18th hole handed to him. Semifinals, he plays Gupta on the 18th. Gupta hits three shots from the same fairway bunker, kind of has it handed to him on 18 for a third time, and then on Sunday in the championship match, he goes to 18 with Osborne, and he took it. He had a 4-iron for that second shot, that approach shot into 18. As soon as he struck it, he knew it was pure. He had 15 feet for eagle, easy two-putt to win the match. It was awesome.
And, you know, there's a couple of things that go into that match play aspect. One is that Strafaci had played that hole. You know, that was his fourth time to play. Yeah. Osborne had only played it once in the match play portion. So he had gotten to see it, had those nerves, knowing that had he gotten to that hole that he was able to win. The only time Osborne did it was in the very first match, and he ended up winning the hole to win one up. And also,
and obviously Osborne had played the hole yesterday morning.
Because they played
36.
But that's not the pressure
different.
Of the match. Yeah.
Yes, the match isn't on the line.
You have 18 more holes after that, no matter what. And also, too, their yardages were not a whole lot different. So for Strafaci to be able to hit first and be able to put the pressure on by hitting it tight like that gave Osborne a little bit more pressure.
Because Osborne was just a little longer.
And he was on the upslope too as well. And so that's why he flared it right, because he wasn't able to get through it. And then he hit a really piss poor chip after that. But nevertheless, I think that Strafaci having the experience of getting his matches to 18, obviously in your match play tournament, you're not going to say, oh, well, I'm three up, I'm gonna lose a couple holes so I can get to 18, so whenever I play my next few matches and I have to go to 18, I know how to experience it. You're not telling yourself that by any stretch of imagination, but the fact that he was able to get there, and whether it be from it getting handed to him, or the fact that he won, just the fact knowing subconsciously that he won 18, I think gave him that confidence to hit that awesome, was it 4 or 5 iron?
It was
four iron. He hit in there to 15 feet. Truly awesome shot. And Bandon Dunes is an awesome golf course. I would love to see a big tournament, major championship, whatever it may be up there. I would love to see the pros go give it a whack.
So the 16th hole was a par three. It was the one where we kept watching them basically hit it up and having it roll back to their feet and past their feet. Was it 15?
Yeah.
Okay. How much would the tour guys bitch on that hole?
Oh, it would be ridiculous. And one thing too, a lot of people are saying the same thing about whenever you have a match play portion, it's, you don't have to necessarily set it up super as fair as you would other tournaments, because it's really just a head-to-head thing. You're not playing against everyone in the field. I remember one year I played in the State Am. It was up at Cedar Ridge, and they had literally not mowed the rough for like a month and a half. You missed the fairway by a yard, and it settles down. It was like 8-inch rough.
But did y'all have spotters?
No spotters. No.
How many lost balls were there?
There was a ton throughout. And the one of the matches, the match I ended up losing, I lost one down. And I shot like 78 or 79. And
wow,
that's just how tough it was playing. So they would set it up different if they played a stroke play tournament here. I mean, obviously the first part of it was stroke play, but then they set it up different for the match play portion. Let it get a little bit more crisp. Play a few more holes up, drivable par fours, that kind of thing. Make it exciting, which we talked about after the PGA Championship. I think they'll do for more tournaments going forward. But I do think if they played a tournament at that course, they would set it up a little bit differently. And this one is at Bandon Dunes, which actually isn't even the highest ranked course there. Pacific Dunes is actually the technically nicest version of the course out there, but that's not even the one they played. Bandon Dunes is a spectacular golf course, though, and I would love to see some sort of bigger tournament get there on a regular basis, however it may happen.
Yeah, it was cool seeing the USAM out there, though. They put on a great tournament. It was fantastic. The coverage, I thought, was great. Bones is so good on the coverage.
Fabulous.
And he was so good down there all week. Jimmy Roberts and those guys, it was really, really well done.
They were
done.
Doing a great job describing on the last few holes, especially the fog.
Yes.
And how much that was having an impact and picking out lines and strategy. And like I said, Bones did such a good job at picking apart these things and pointing them out. And we had mentioned it forever once he realized, once he got off of the bag for JT, and if he would go back, or if he would go back to broadcasting, and it just sealed it up right there. Whichever one he decides to do, he's going to knock it out of the park. But it showed to me yesterday that he is the best on-course announcer right now.
Yes, 100% he is. He's just been out there for so long, but it's a lot of guys have been out there for so long. You have to be able to put on a microphone, speak clearly, descriptively, entertainingly, and Bones does all those things. So it's awesome to have him on the call. It's almost as awesome as McRae Roofing. And McRae Roofing, it's got to be your go-to here in the state of Oklahoma. We know people are constantly needing new roofs in this state. Give Jeff McRae and McRae Roofing a call at 405-692-4000. You can also visit them online at McRaeRoofing.com. His team's sole purpose is to create you a masterpiece of a roof, which brings out the beauty of your home and its surroundings, a beauty that will last for years to come. Again, that number is 405-692-4000. McRae Roofing. You can visit them at McRaeRoofing.com. That's M-C-R-A-Y roofing.com. Taylor, we had the senior players this weekend at Firestone, which was cool to see Firestone.
It was gorgeous to look at. It was in prestigious shape. And they set it up tough, boy. Only two players finished under par.
And again, we're a couple weeks now removed from TP Southwind, and I'm about to bash on it again. And it's not even because I don't like it. It's a good golf course. But seeing Firestone on my TV made me hate TPC Southwind more. Because Firestone's just so good.
It looked so... It just looks so pure. It was so green, so lush, set up so great. And it's just like you said, if we had gone from Muni Piece of Dump Goat Ranch to TPC Southwind, we'd be praising it. The fact that we went from Firestone here, it stinks. And it was a great tournament, obviously, senior players. It's considered a major championship on the senior tour. They have five majors when we have four, so please don't urge that to make the players' championship a major on the PGA Tour. Let's not even get started on that.
Because then we have to retroactively go back and give Ricky one.
God bless him.
And then Tiger would have 17. Jack would have, how many players Jack win? Two?
If not that, well, because the players didn't start until 70-something, because that's when the course opened. So if he does, he only has a couple of them. And that's the reason you really can't do it, is because it doesn't go back that far. And I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole. But nevertheless, I love seeing Firestone out there. It was great to see. Like, only two guys finished under par. The winner, Jerry Kelly, had to make a hole-in-one on the 12th hole yesterday on Sunday to even get to 3-under. That got him to 5-under, I believe, or something like that. But... yeah, only two guys finished under par. Angel Jimenez, my favorite golfer of all time, basically, finished third with an even par. Just true legend there. And like I said, Colby, I don't know how it has to happen, but we got to get a tour event back at Firestone somehow.
Just for the record, Nicklaus won it three times, the players.
So he would be 21.
Yeah, 74, 76, and 78.
So that would move us further away from Jack than closer for our Tiger count.
Oh, also, it started in 1974, and Jack won it in 74, 76, and 78. So he won it three of the first 5 years it was around.
Not bad.
Kind of destroys the horses for courses not happening at TPC narrative.
Yes.
Of course, it's not the 70s anymore.
Yeah.
It's 2020 where we see guys like Siwoo Kim go out and win the Players' Championship. Siwoo had a good weekend. How about on Saturday, he makes an ace on number 3 and then comes around on number 12 and lips out for another ace.
Well,
and nearly hold out another shot on a par 4.
I don't know how I feel about it, because I understand it's the heat of the moment, it's a tournament, it's the third round, and you don't want to get too excited, but... he made a hole in one and showed like literally no emotion. He was playing with our.
I don't think he saw it go in.
Well, they knew it went in, and he was smiling and doing all this. There's people up at the green cheering. Oh, he knew it went in.
Well, he knew it went in. I don't think he visually saw it, because to me it looked like his reaction was a little bit delayed. Like he saw the people cheering and then he kind of raised his arms but didn't really go crazy. But then what was crazy is on 12, I mean, he hard lipped out for another one.
Oh, it was almost a 180 lip out.
Yes. And for it a was second dead ace.
Yeah. That would have been insane. Man, you go back to the Siwoo thing. He's improved his game so much. When he won the Players' Championship, I think he was either dead last or close to dead last and strokes gained, tee to green.
Yeah, he just accidentally got hot for a week.
That's all it was. And
now he's a good player.
He's starting to pick it up, and he's starting to get it figured out, and he'll be a guy to look at going into the FedEx. I have to pull up exactly where he's ranked at.
Oh, I got it right here. He's at 82, so he needs a good week to get to Chicago.
That's because he must have been playing bad earlier in the year, and he hasn't. He didn't win at all this year. So, you know, like, for example, Herman moved up to 54th or whatever, so who was 190th. So if you just get a win, that gives you so many points. So you'll see a lot of guys who weren't able to win who will need good weeks coming up this next week. And we'll have our full preview show coming on Wednesday with all of our picks and
all
that.
We'll have our full preview, and there are so many big names in the game of golf that currently sit between 71 and 125. We won't do it all today, but on Wednesday, we've got big names that are currently in that range, and maybe Taylor and I will give you predictions. Maybe on Wednesday, we'll each pick three names that are currently outside the top 70 that we think will get in. We'll have a good enough week in Boston to get themselves inside the top 70. That'll be fun.
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea. And it just goes to show how, with the shortened season, it kind of changed everything up. I know they're not taking away tour cards this year, so that is a good thing. And it just will be interesting and great to see this next weekend in golf. TBC Boston is a course that used to be called the Deutsche Bank That was actually was the second one in the sequence. It would always be the Northern Trust. It would be held at normally some course around New York, and then it would go to Boston, and then wherever it'd be at Cog Hill this year, Olympia Fields for the next one. So they just eliminated the second one, but instead of it having at a New York course, they went to TPC Boston. Really great course to watch on television. I think everyone have a really good viewer experience there. Last hole is a reachable par five, so that could have a lot of impact on these guys that you mentioned who are around the 70 mark. An eagle on the last hole can move someone up, can move someone out, or there's hazards up there. So if you may hit a bad shot and make a bogey, all of a sudden that could drop you out of the top 70. So I think that very similar to what we had this last tournament. It wasn't as much. It seemed like in the last couple years of those, you know, it seemed like at this last Wyndham tournament, every year there would be the last few guys coming down the stretch of a putt to get inside the 125 or a putt that didn't. And it didn't seem like there was that much pressure as there was in the last few years, but I think this next week we'll see a lot of that, of those guys right around that 70 mark who can, with a birdie or bogey or with another player's birdie or bogey, can push them in or out of next week.
Yeah, absolutely. By the way, we mentioned the senior players. Congrats to Jerry Kelly for the win. Won it at 3 under. He aced the 12th hole on the back nine on Sunday. He had a 2-shot lead and made an ace on 12. So it was a good week, obviously, for Jerry Kelly. And then we had a 4-way playoff on the LPGA Tour for the Ladies Scottish Open between Cheyenne Knight, Azahara Munoz, Emily Christine Peterson, and Stacey Lewis. And Stacey Lewis ends up making a birdie there on 18 on the first playoff hole and getting the win. So big congrats to Stacey Lewis. I recognize the name Cheyenne Knight up there. Cheyenne Knight, a couple years ago, whenever I was out at Carston for the ladies NCAA national championship, she was on the Alabama team that finished runner-up to Arizona, and that Alabama team was loaded with talent. So looks like she's got her career off to a good start. And then Danielle Kang, who we mentioned, is dating Maverick McNealy on the PGA Tour, had won twice in a row. She finished a mere 1 shot out of the playoff and burned the edge on 18 to get into the playoff. So there's been some really good golf played lately on the LPGA as well.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, there has. And, you know, try to break down other tours here. The Corn Ferry Tour, they had the Albertsons Boise Open. Steven Yeager won with a 2,200 par. Had some other guys with some
high. Did he make some long putts throughout the week?
I'm sure he did.
Some Yeager bombs, yeah. If you will?
Horrible joke, but I love it.
So bad. But so good on Monday.
Exactly. We need that to brighten our day. And some good players, local finishes. Charlie Saxon had a good week, finished top 10, I believe. Max McGreevy, who won a couple weeks ago, finished top 25. Josh Krill made the cut as well, another local guy. So it's great to see that. This next week it will be at the Scarlet Course, which is where we wanted the the work day to go to. So it'll be great to see that tournament. And then the week after that is the Tour Championship, which is at Victoria National, another great course. Taylor Gooch brought up how great that course was.
Where's that at?
Chicago area, I believe.
Is it Chicago area?
I think so, yeah. Somewhere up in that area. Let me see here. It's in Indiana. I'm sorry. Illinois, Indiana, same thing. The state still starts with an L, whatever. But nevertheless, the next few weeks on the Corn Ferry.
Fazio course.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And so the next couple weeks on the Corn Ferry Tour will be pretty big as well for those. I believe the regular season already ended, so that top 25 is set. So then the next, obviously, Taylor Moore came out and said they're not taking away or redistributing tour cards, but a lot of status will be determined over these next couple events. So not only just on the PGA Tour and the major championships coming up, we got good golf all around.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, really looking forward to some good golf coming up. Really looking forward to our preview show on Wednesday for the Northern Trust this week. Tigers obviously in the field, which is a big deal. Ton of big names in the field, and some of those are going to have to play well if they want to play next week. Otherwise, we're going to have some guys who are going to be getting themselves some off time before the U.S. Open. So a lot of names to watch this week at the Northern Trust. We will break that all down for you on Wednesday. Reminder, get down to Bushwood in Chickasha, 405-224-1250. Call and make your tee time. My dad was out there playing yesterday, said it's looking good. Had an absolute blast. Had a little bit of rain come through last week, helped soften it up, green it up a little bit. So get on down to Bushwood in Chickasha, 405-224-1250. Shout out to both Bushwood and McRae Roofing, our great sponsors here on the 73rd hole. All right, lot of great winners this weekend in the game of golf. It was a good weekend for the game of golf. Looking forward to our preview show on Wednesday for the Northern Trust. Everyone, have a great Monday. Thanks for listening to the 73rd hole.